Typically, when I see a CISO failing to get the tools and the resources they need to do the job, they're just not telling the story the right way. Because when we tell that story, people will understand the landscape of what we deal with every day.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the HIP Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Duby, Principal Technologist Americas for Sempris. The cybersecurity research company, Cybersecurity Ventures, estimated that annual global cybercrime damages in 2025 at $10.5 trillion. That's large enough that, if you compared it to national economies, the figure would rank behind only the U.S. and China. Former CISA Director Jen Easterly describes this as cybercrimea. And on the other side of the ring, defending organizations against attacks from cybercrimea is the role of the Chief Information Security Officer, the CISO. I would note that in Asia Pacific, they call it the CISO. You decide which makes more sense. The role of the CISO has been described as the toughest in the IT world. Defending an organization's infrastructure of thousands or tens of thousands of computing devices, applications, firewalls, and networks, and the mountains of vulnerabilities and technical debt they create against these well-financed villains. Sempris' documentary, Midnight in the War Room, shines a light on the cyber war that's happening all around us in cyberspace that most of us are totally unaware of until something you depend on, perhaps for your life, becomes unavailable. It also focuses on the role of the CISO as a leading defender against this enemy at the gates. And today I'm honored to have a CISO featured in Midnight in the War Room on the podcast. Phil Keebler has spent nearly three decades at the intersection of technology, risk, and business, building information security programs that work in the real world. As vice president and CISO at Meijer, Phil leads security for one of the nation's largest privately held retailers, overseeing the protection of supply chains, customer data, and critical operations across hundreds of locations in the Midwest. Meijer is a multi-billion dollar private retailer with more than 270 stores and around 80,000 employees. Before joining Meijer in 2015, he served as CISO at Bass Pro Shops and previously held the CISO role at Finish Line. Earlier in his career, he led security at Herf Jones, bringing security discipline to the manufacturing sector. He began his career at EDS and spent years consulting in the aerospace sector, where he got his start in security. Welcome, Phil.
Thank you, Sean. A real honor to be here with you today.
Well, you know, when we were having conversations, we sort of bonded on an intersection in your early career. You actually got your start at EDS, Electronic Data Systems, back in the day when EDS was the shop that Ross Perot built, based in, North Dallas, in the middle of a golf course way back in the day. And then up in Plano, just down the street from me. So how did you go from being a sysadmin and get into cybersecurity?
You know, it's thinking back, that's 32 years ago, Sean. It was an interesting story. It's a long time, right? But I was chosen, I guess, by one of our three-letter agencies to assist them with a case at that time. And, you know, looking back, the way that all came about was I had made a good impression on the chief security officer, who was a retired director for that three-letter agency. And when they needed help, they reached out to me. You know, I'm fresh out of college, at the time building compact ProLiant 4000 servers. Next thing you know, I've got somebody tapping me on the shoulder, showing me a badge and saying, come with us. We'd like to talk to you. The end of that, it was 6 months working with them, developing forensics techniques, being able to prove and capture the evidence that we needed in order to successfully prosecute this individual. And that's the day that my life changed, really, that moment. You know, it opened my eyes to the fact that technology, which I was always passionate about, could actually be used against us. And so, you know, I wanted to be on the other side of that fight.
So that was your foot into cybersecurity. And anyone that's spent any time in cybersecurity knows that it is still a big step from being on a cybersecurity team to being a CISO. So how did you make the step from general cybersecurity to the CISO role?
You know, it was never my plan, right, to go into management. When I was at Herf Jones, I was fortunate enough to work for a great CIO there who evidently saw potential in me and really kind of took me under his wing. And, you know, I started going through all these training classes, you know, management principles, and, you know, went to the Dale Carnegie School of how to win friends and influence people, right? And just started to learn these communication skills and leadership skills. And, you know, the next thing you know, I'm growing a team, right? I'm promoted to manager and started to grow a little team, and then promoted to director, and the teams got a little larger, and I started to lead leaders. And, you know, now looking back, I think that was probably 22 years ago. You know, here I am, I guess I'm in leadership, no longer writing snort rules, right? My job's totally different today. So again, just, you know, the right circumstance at the right time and taking the opportunity that was presented to me.
So how long have you been a CISO then?
My first official CISO role was at Finish Line, and I believe that was, well, it's a long time, right? I think we're talking 16 years ago.
Which, it's like dog years as a CISO, right? You know, 1 year in the equivalent of many regular years. So, you know, it's interesting you talked about, you know, you became a leader of leaders, and so that you have those aspects of management that, you know, any good leader has that are the commonalities. But CISO is different. As I said, you know, it's an extraordinarily difficult role, and it might be the most misunderstood executive role in organizations today. So as I said, being a CISO is not like being in general cybersecurity. What's the role of the CISO, and how has it changed from when you started in the role?
I don't know any industry that evolves quite as quickly and dramatically as cyber, right? So the role is continuously changing and evolving. The way that it's different, Sean, is, you know, you will face criticism every single day when you're a CISO, right? We are making decisions in the moment with very limited information in order to limit the blast radius of an attack, protect the organization, recover as quickly as possible. We are always doing this with whatever information is at hand, right? And time is always of the essence. So what will always happen when you're in the CISO role is post-incident, everyone with that perfect hindsight, right, with all of the data available, they will question why you made the decisions that you made. And I think it's unique, the role, in that you have to take that criticism, you have to take it on the chin, you have to go away, you have to find what truth exists in the criticism. Where did we do well? Where did we fail? What do we need to address tomorrow to be even a little bit better than we were today? And you can't let that get you down. I often will talk about cybersecurity and specifically the CISO role as a very thankless kind of job. Not that the companies don't appreciate the work. They absolutely do. But as we sit here today and nobody's banging on my door, right? We're doing all right today, but nobody's really thinking great job security, right? It's always in those moments when you're dealing with an incident that, you know, you find your colleagues saying, what did we miss? What did you do? What did you not do? That's a hard thing to do 10 years, 20 years, 30 years in a role.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting that you should say that, because in Midnight in the War Room, you specifically in your interview, you say, we cannot define success in this role as stopping all the attacks. It's inevitable that they are going to be successful, which is, you know, you have it's different than other management, of course. So I guess the question is, how then do you define success as a CISO, at the executive suite and up to the board?
It's a really great question. It's a hard question to answer. Certainly, if we try to define it as stopping all attacks, right, that's an impossible bar for anyone to reach. You know, like I just mentioned, for me, Sean, it's about, you know, how quickly did we detect a potential incident? How quickly did we respond? How well did we respond to that incident? you know, did we achieve our objective, which is to protect our organization, to protect our brand, to protect our customers and our team members? I think success is when we go home and we look at those incidents that we dealt with, we find those things that we can improve upon. We come back the next day with, you know, I think in the documentary, I may have said resilience or grit, right? But you put your boots back on, you come in the next day and you address those issues that you can address to be a little bit better. It's continuous improvement, right? For a security team. And I think so a successful CISO understands that it's not about prevention. It's about resilience. It's about recovery. And it's about identifying those things in your program that you can do incrementally better every single day. We're in the pursuit of perfection, but we understand we'll never get there.
I think given the unique challenges of your role, it seems like a lot of the job skills, one of the biggest and perhaps underestimated job skill of a CISO today is communications, both communicating down and also communicating up. So what you've just described to me is probably something that you have to delicately educate the board on. Tell me a little bit about the role of a CISO in terms of communication and managing expectations.
It's interesting, Sean. The art of storytelling is a very important skill set for a CISO or someone aspiring to be a CISO. One of the things that I see across all industries with senior security leaders is struggling to, one, talk about risk in a way that makes sense to the business. The things they care about are not the things that we care about, right? So you have to translate that into terms that they understand and that are relatable. And by the way, that's how you get the budget and the teams that you need, right? Typically, when I see a CISO failing to get the tools and the resources they need to do the job, they're just not telling the story the right way. Because when we tell that story, and it's why I'm excited about Midnight in the War Room, right? Finally, people will understand the landscape of what we deal with every day, right? As human beings. But it's the same with the board, right? You have to understand their language. You have to communicate in a way that they understand and in terms that matter to them.
So much of what we have to do comes down into storytelling. And I'm hearing it, you know, I'm a big believer in it, and I hear it more and more. Is you have to, especially around technology, people tend to talk about features or bits and bytes or whatever you want to call it. But if you don't tell a story around it, you're requiring the individual you're talking to do the translation in your head, in their head, to do the translation for it to make sense. They have to go, well, it's internally, they're going, why should I care? And if you explicitly say, here's why you should care in, as you said, in terms that they understand, which are, you know, business leaders is very different than the technology leaders generally. That's a really important aspect of what you're saying is what's happening. What are your thoughts? We've talked about Midnight in the War Room, and this is the Semperis produced documentary about CISOs and about bad guys. And it's premiering at Black Hat on August 4th. What are your thoughts about the documentary? You've said a little bit about it and your thoughts about participating in it.
You know, probably the greatest honor in my career, right? To sit alongside, legendary security professionals, right? Like Dr. Chance Cunningham, who, you know, was interviewing right before me. And I've followed my entire career. Just a real honor to be able to tell the story, right? I think one of the things that as a CISO that we have to accept and kind of go through is most people don't understand our role day to day. And, you know, I really believe even, you know, security leaders adjacent to a CISO role don't understand what that role entails every single day, making those decisions with very limited information, trying to do everything you can to protect your company, your brand, your customers, but at the same time, having the responsibility of caring for all those team members that are actually heads down dealing with the attacks, responding to the alerts, triaging incidents, recovering systems, taking all those actions that we take. They have a very difficult job, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, not getting the recognition and the accolades that maybe other IT professionals may get because we're not developing products or generating revenue, right? But they are working nonstop to protect the company. So as a CISO, you're dealing with, like you mentioned earlier, communicating up, you're dealing with managing the events, the incidents, the communication, but you also have that team that you have to care for underneath you, right? So it's a big job every single day. If you're not in the role, you carry that responsibility, right, with you every day. When you lay down at night, we talk a lot about mental health. I know during the interview, I don't know how much made it into the documentary, but having a way to kind of decouple from, you know, this work is very important. You know, you can't always take it home with you. You do have to find ways to kind of shut down. But, you know, that it's a lot to deal with every single day. And so to be able to communicate that, I remember telling the interviewer, I think it was Bill, is that right?
Bill, yeah.
Yeah, I remember telling Bill, he asked how I felt afterwards. And I said, you know, it feels a little weird. And he said, why do you feel weird? And I said, I don't know, like a heaviness in my chest. I said, I think it's the first time, because we were together for quite a while. And he asked a lot of very important questions that I'd never been asked before. And these are things I've just carried with me. And to be able to share those, I said, I feel like, I don't know, like a weight's been lifted off, right? Like I finally had a chance to kind of tell my perspective of what I've done for the last, 30 years. And I joke, I don't want anybody to get upset, but my family doesn't really understand what I do, right? Most of my IT peers don't really truly understand the role and what you do every day. And so you kind of feel like unless you're a CISO, you don't really get it. And I think that's why we have such a tight community, by the way, right? Because as a CISO, when I meet or get an opportunity to talk to another CISO, I understand and they understand. And so it bonds us.
Yeah.
Anyway, I kind of rambled there, but yeah, a lot, Sean. It meant a lot.
No, that's great because, well, and you and I are going to be at Black Hat for the premiere and we look forward to that. I'll be sure to whistle when your interview comes up in there. But you raised a couple of points. Number one is the team. So you have the challenge of managing up to the board or your leadership and setting expectations. And you'd mention about taking it on the chin potentially every day. And at the same time, while you're taking it on the chin, you also have to counsel your team who are also being beat on, maybe in a slightly different way, not by the board directly. But so this requires some real leadership techniques that are not common today. And so we have the sort of the sideways part, or the, maybe I'll call it the lateral part of it, which is using your peers as a way of blowing off steam and communicating as well. I saw an interview, I can't remember who it was, somebody in, it was an interview with, and I'm going to draw this kind of weird analogy here. It was an interview in the New York Times of Mick Jagger recently. It's current right now. And he said that show business people tend to hang out with show business people because they know what it's like and the rest of the public doesn't know what it's like. Similarities here. You get together, and the difference, of course, is that you can compare technologies and talk about what's worked and what hasn't worked, which has got to be very valuable as well. So you talked about work-life balance. And so what do you recommend to your team, for example, of how you fit a work-life balance into a job where you're essentially being attacked 24/7.
Boy, it's tough, right? Security professionals are really unique individuals in a lot of cases too, right? So that disconnect and what brings peace is different for every single member of your team, right? We have a responsibility as leaders, and I know this is very important to me, that it is not a one-way street when it comes to my expectations of my security teams. Turnover, as you know, in this field is very high. And I think it's because we burn people out. And, you know, I'm really happy to say we don't have a turnover issue. We retain our security talent here, and we have for many, many years. And that is because I recognize when you are just taking as a security leader, right? The expectation of always being on, always responding. It's so important that you step away. If I have a team member that's working on a Saturday night at 2 o'clock in the morning because we're responding to an incident, I expect them to take another day off next week, right? Like it is truly a give and take with my teams. We have, you know, MDR partners. We have, you know, a large enough team that we are working 24/7. But when you have to deal with that on a daily basis, it's important that you give them that time to go and recoup and regenerate. And my thoughts always are, you're no good to me, right? If you're burned out when I need you. So go get that rest and relaxation, whatever it means for you. For some, it's being outdoors. For some, it's going to Comic-Con, right? Whatever it is, like, go do that, right?
Right.
We've got the helm while you're gone. I'll see you when you're refreshed and you're ready to get back to work.
Right. And this is your security team is dealing with crises or at least events, and hopefully not too many crises. But what would you, as an experienced CISO, what advice would you give to a CISO that isn't experienced in crisis management?
There's so much, right? I think we could do hours on this, Sean, just if I could share all of the ways that I failed, right? And the valuable lessons that I've learned. It's failure's the greatest teacher, right? It truly is. And I've made every mistake that you can make, and I'll probably make some today. And I relish that opportunity to be able to share that. But I would say a couple of things. One, when you are in the midst of a crisis, everyone around you will be panicking, right? Every senior leader and executive will be panicking, wondering what's happening. Your job as a CISO is to be that calm presence during the crisis, right? Your teams are doing their job, responding the way that you have trained them, the way that you have created those playbooks, right? To give them those exact processes to follow during these types of incidents. The last thing you need to do as a CISO is to be running around like, you know, everything's on fire. So primary role, stay calm in those situations. Being very factual, thinking about specifically what to do in these crisis situations, right? You are going to have very limited information. Please be accurate with what you're sharing. If you don't know something for sure, make sure you're stating that, right? You want very clear evidence and data to support what you are stating, because oftentimes that's what's going to be used for a communications team response or to media inquiries. So no speculation, no guessing. Don't try to, you know attribution, right? What data do you have? What facts do you know? And stick to those. It's going to take a long time, if it's a crisis situation, to get all the data available and put that story together. And I see that often, Sean, right? The reason it comes to mind is, you know, I think a lot of times we want to just, you know, get this over with as quickly as possible. Here's what I think happened, you know, and it turns out you're wrong. So just, that's my advice for dealing with a crisis, I guess, right out of the gate.
Well, and that there's obviously leadership aspects to that. Be the calm leader, so your troops are calm if they see that. And also, because as I like to say, everybody's running around with their hair on fire, you be the calm person in there. Plus, there's all sorts of regulatory aspects to what you say as well. So
that's right.
It really gets complicated. So, you know, you've obviously had a long career and a great perspective on things. And besides, you know, just getting a lot of heartburn out of doing this job, what This is a sort of, I give you your soapbox moment, right? Mm-hmm. So you've had a long perspective. What sort of recurring trends or shortcomings or glaring errors do you see in cybersecurity that people just don't seem to get, or that just whenever you see it happen, you're like, oh, not again?
Oh, man. There's so many, Sean. So one of the things that I think, I say this a lot. So if you ever hang out with me or you've ever heard me speak somewhere, you've probably heard me say this. Back in the day, all right, SANS had their top 20 critical controls. Now, they probably still do, right? But we reference, you know, all different frameworks these days. But back in the day, the SANS top 20 critical controls, that was kind of the go-to gold standard. The number one control was an inventory of authorized and unauthorized devices on your network. And do you know, I pursued that for decades, trying to get a real-time inventory of authorized and unauthorized devices on my network. And it's hard, right? And CISOs around the world, if they're honest, will say that is such a difficult control to achieve. We're still not great at that, right? Now, they've gotten much better, right? And it is certainly achievable, but we got to get better about that, right? Because that underlies everything else we do. You may go to your board and say, we've got great endpoint protection on every device. Well, that's going to assume that you know every single device that is operating within your ecosystem. If you don't, what you just said to the board could cause you a problem down the road. It is so important. Think about what we're dealing with right now with AI. The ability to find and exploit vulnerabilities is happening at a speed that I never would have saw coming, right? I never could have guessed we'd be here where we're at today. How can you scan and produce a report of vulnerabilities that you can then provide to a team to get those remediated, whether it's patching or compensating controls? But how can you do that if you can't scan and understand every single device that is within your ecosystem? All of these critical controls that we have, they rely on that complete inventory. It's foundational. And so, you know, it frustrates me that as an industry, we still struggle. And we can name a lot of breaches in the last 10 years that have been because there was a vulnerability that remained unpatched for years, right? Eventually, a bad actor found it, they exploited it, they're in the news, right? So many times we go back and they knew about that vulnerability, or it sat out there and existed and they just didn't know it was there. Like, we've got to get better at these fundamental, foundational types of things. So that gets me. The other thing that gets me is, why as a community have we not gotten better at vulnerability management, right? And I was doing vulnerability management when I was using Nessus, the free open source scanner, right? And what I would do is I'd scan the network and throw an Excel spreadsheet across the wall to the infrastructure teams and tell them to go patch. Do you know how many organizations I see still doing that same thing, Sean? Here's a list of all the servers with all the patches, go patch them. Right? We have got to get better at prioritizing, right? Giving our partners that are doing that remediation, giving them data they can actually work with, right? In a way that protects the organization. Every vulnerability is not created equally, right? We know that.
Right.
What are the crown jewels in your organizations? What compensating controls are in place that could mitigate that? We have to do a better job of understanding those assets, understanding the vulnerabilities, and then presenting them to our infrastructure teams and other teams in a way that is more manageable. But I see everyone struggle with that. And after this long in the industry, I'm disappointed that we haven't gotten better. Yeah, that's a little bit of a soapbox. It's very right. Frustrating. The other thing, if I can get back on my soapbox, Sean, that I'm pretty passionate about.
We got it here. Go for it.
Yeah. I say this often as well. If you're really good at endpoint protection, if you're really good at vulnerability management, right? Not patching, patch remediation, but vulnerability management. If you're really good at email security, really good at awareness training, right? For your weakest link, your employees. If you're really good at those four things, you have addressed probably 98% of the risk that your organization is going to face. We are flooded with all kinds of great security technologies today, right? And I see this happening a lot. I'm not going to name some organizations. There have been studies on this. I'm not going to do it. But there are some pretty major breaches where, you know, one of the core issues was there was too much technology to find the signal within the noise. A lot of people know who I'm talking about when I say that. But all too often, we think the answer to our problems are layering on as many technologies and as many security tools as we can get, right? And security teams love that shiny penny, right? This brand new startup's out and they've got the answer to all of our problems. Meanwhile, we haven't solved the fundamental problem of understanding what we actually have communicating on our networks. All right, but we will distract ourselves. And vendors are really good, right? They're going to offer you a grill or a $200 gift card. Just let me sit down and we'll talk about this. And I'm going to solve all these problems. Meanwhile, we're ignoring maybe the less fun part of security, but it's that getting really good at those fundamentals. That's not as fun as implementing this new technology. That's killing companies and security teams. And I see it happen all the time. So my advice always, and I've helped a lot of CISOs over the years. I've been fortunate to be able to see many kind of grow into the career. And that's always the first bit of advice I give them is get really good at the fundamentals first. That's going to address the majority of the issues. Then you can start to build from there. But if you start building before you address the fundamentals are going to get you in trouble every single time.
Yeah, it's what I call eat your vegetables. And the people that pay attention to this podcast know I love to say it, which is, like you said, the sans 20. The basics are still the basics. And they're still tough. And even though we get more technology to make it easier, the landscape has gotten more difficult. I'm sure Meyer is a perfect example of, you know, you've got tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of devices of all kinds to keep track of, and, you know, probably hybrid considerations and everything else. And of course, long ago, a security person told me, hey, you know, the reasons that security people are not necessarily great on the people part of these things is because they're more comfortable with technology. So they would prefer to play with the technology rather than to handle the communications and all that. But it's clear from our conversation that you have absolutely mastered that aspect of it. And I'm sure as you're mentoring other CISOs and your team as well, it is about, you know, it's the people and then the process and then the technology. As you said, in crisis management, for example, the fact that your people know exactly what to do, they've got the process. You have the people aspect of how important it is to remain calm and be a guiding person in all of this, in the center of the storm, as it were. This has been a great conversation. I think it's very enlightening. And for people that are considering the CISO, there's a lot of good information in here. And you're certainly an inspiring CISO, Phil. It's been a great interview.
Sean, thank you. Like I mentioned earlier, and I mean this, it's truly an honor. I am very fortunate in that I feel like this was, you know, my purpose, and I get to live that out every day. And, you know, so grateful for the opportunity to speak with you and share this. And maybe there's a tiny tidbit that someone can, you know, get some value from. And so just thank you for the opportunity today.
And for everybody else, if you're going to be at Black Hat, your chance to see Midnight in the War Room, and I'm sure it will be available more broadly after that. At this moment, I don't know where that will be, but keep Midnight in the War Room. And of course, there's an Instagram account and also LinkedIn to keep track of what we'll be doing with that documentary soon. So thanks, Phil. Appreciate it. And I'll see you in a few weeks.
Thanks again, Sean. See you there.
Thanks so much for listening to the HIP Podcast, brought to you by Semperis, the leader in identity resilience. If you found this conversation valuable, subscribe to the show on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And if you have a minute, please give us a rating or leave us a review, as that really helps other listeners find the show. You can find past episodes and more information at hipconf.com/podcasts. I'm Sean Doobie. Stay secure, and I'll see you in the next one.